So, here we are. Glad to be here with each one of you. Song service has been great. Appreciate the prayer. I know some of you have come a long distance and some of you come a short distance. This is like old home week for me, being back up here. And I appreciate so much just the opportunity. This is very humbling to me, to be asked to come here and do this for you. And myself, I do not have the confidence to stand before you, but I'm trying to help us get closer to the Lord and to do His will so that we can all be in heaven together. That's the main thing that we want to come to church for in the first place. Just a little housekeeping. If you noticed on the little stand at the door, there's some bulletins. I made one bulletin for the whole week. It's got all the lessons in it with a title and three questions that I meant to kind of pique your interest, and then all the verses. Now, this is something I've not tried before. It may be something I never try again. But I put the verses there for each lesson for you to take the lesson home and use those verses if you want to and see what conclusion you would come to. As I mentioned this morning about the plaque that I've had on my wall, it said, if you give a man bread, this morning I said fish, but I believe it goes bread. If you give a man bread, you feed him once. But if you teach him to fish, you nourish him forever. And so what I'm really after this week is to nourish you forever. I want to encourage you to read the Bible, to study the Bible, because it contains much more power than I can do. And it's more specific. Because in the Bible contains things you'll read and you'll see your name on it, if you're honest. If you get to digging deep enough, you'll see your name in the pages of the Bible. If you let yourself go into the mental reality, as we spoke of this morning and as we'll speak of tonight, if you let yourself go into the mental reality of the Bible, you'll see yourself in there far better than I could portray it. And so really what I want to leave you with is, if anything, a revival to read and to study and to get the power that's in the Bible. Tonight we want to talk about of law and love. Here's our three questions that we'll try to get to at the end of the lesson. What is the real purpose of all of the law? Not just any one, but all of the law. Why did God give us a law in the first place? Why do we as humans need a law? What are the two kinds of love? And you, right now you should be thinking, why is this guy talking about law and love? But I hope to bring that together here in a few minutes. Can the law tell me who or how to love? You know, love's one of those kind of strange things. It's hard to get a handle on it. Can the law, can the Bible, something written 2,000 years ago, tell me in 2016 what to do with my emotions? Well, it might. Let's see what the Bible says. So let's first ask a question, as I like to do. Let's make sure we know what we're talking about. What is law? By dictionary, it is a rule of conduct or procedure established by custom, agreement, or authority. It is the body of rules and principles governing the affairs of a community and enforced by political authority, a legal system. It is the condition of social order and justice created by adherence to such a system. So look at these three things, and each one describes a different body. The first one is a rule. The law is a rule. For instance, the law on the road out here might be 45 miles an hour. That is one rule. The law says it's 45 miles an hour on this road. But you go very far, and that law is going to change. It's going to change to 35 miles an hour. It may go to 55 miles an hour. You get on the interstate, it's going to get higher. Get in town, you're going to get traffic lights, stop signs. You're going to get marks on the side of the road. And in the road, you follow all these things. All those things collectively are the body of rules. The body of rules that make it safe to drive. You put the traffic rules together with the rules of taxes and business and all sorts of other things, and you have a condition of society that keeps us safe, that should keep us from having to wear a gun like they did in the Old West to protect themselves, and I don't know which way we're going to go. But the condition of safe society is all of it together. Now, you and I both know, we don't have to name specifics, but we know different groups have based their whole religion on one rule. And they'll divide churches on one rule, not a body of rules, but on one rule. And then we have the body of rules, and we have a condition. So what we want to look at as we talk about the law is we want to look at all of it together. And we never want to lose sight that the Bible gives us specifics, but it's for the purpose of creating a condition of Christianity, of being like heaven, of being like God and Jesus. They're the ones we're supposed to be like. That is the condition that the Bible wants us to have and to have in our families, in our homes. Not a home of turmoil, but a home that's like heaven, where we can shut the door and keep sin out, not shut the door and do what we want to, but to shut the door and make it like heaven. According to Strong's, who interprets words for us from Greek into English, it's to parcel out, especially food or grazing, to animals. Well, that's not relevant, but I'm going to throw it out there because that is one of the definitions. Another definition is a regulation. We understand that. Something specific as of Moses, or something figurative as of a principle. So you get the idea. It could be one rule, or it could be a condition caused by the rules. So what is the law for? I asked a question a minute ago, and I hope you were interested in it. Why do humans need a law? Why did God think we needed a law? Well, we get part of the answer in Hebrews 12, verses 5 and 6. My son, despise not the chastening of the Lord, nor faint when you are rebuked of him. For whom the Lord loves, he chastens, and scourges every son whom he receives. Why? Why do we need scourging? Why do we need chastening? Because we weren't born and raised to know to do everything right. Now, our parents did the best they could, and they could be good examples to us, and they could read the scriptures to us, and we could have had the scriptures to us, but at some point in our lives, we're going to test those scriptures. And when we test those scriptures, sometimes people go into different lifestyles, or they go into different habits, or go into things that's not right. And so, the Bible chastens. It corrects. It puts us in the right direction. If you imagine these toys that we used to have for the kids, that you could turn them on, and they had a little wheel in the bottom that swiveled, and it would go this way until it hit something, and then it would go this way till it hit something, and it would go this way. Well, in my mind, I always envisioned the law as being like the two planks down the side. And that little thing in the middle is me. And I'm bumping up against these things. And I'm doing the best I can, but I don't know which way to go. But, you know, as Paul said, I didn't really know what sin was until the law told me what I was doing was sin. Well, that was a correction. That was a bump. So it bumps me back this way, and it bumps me back that way, so that I can come out at the end where I'm supposed to be. Ask this question. How can we be correctly chastened by anything other than the law and the word? You tell me. Now focus on the word correctly chastened. We'd be scared to death by the stuff we see on the news. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about how can we be correctly chastened to become godlike and not be like heathens and not be like cutthroats and not be like cheats and liars and all that stuff. How can we be correctly chastened if it's not in the Word? I don't think there's anything on earth. You can go to psychologists and psychiatrists and you read all these good books that Dr. Field writes and all that stuff, but that's just good moral stuff. But how do you get to spiritual stuff? It's got to be in the Word. Okay, the law is to correct us for one very good purpose. One very good purpose. The next few verses in Hebrews 12, 7 through 10. If you endure chastening, God deals with you as with sons. For what son is he whom the Father chastens not? But if you be without chastisement, in other words, you don't take it, you run from it, or you change it, whereof all are partakers, then are you bastards and not sons. Furthermore, we have had fathers of our flesh which corrected us, and we gave them reverence. For they verily for a few days chastened us after their own pleasure, but he for our profit, that we might be partakers of his holiness. That's the key. God didn't chasten us just because he wants to and jerk us one way or another. You know, you can take an authoritative parent, a dictator parent, and he'll jerk his kids around just to show he's always got the power. You don't like to think about that happening, but that happens. And he might jerk his wife around too, just to show he's got the power. God does not do that. Everything he does is to make us better. It's for to profit us, that we may be partakers of his holiness. It's for our profit, but we might have heaven. God wants us to have heaven. He wants us to be there. Remember the story about the wedding feast? The wedding feast was prepared, and the master of the house, he wanted people to come into the wedding feast. He didn't want to make that wedding feast for nothing. God didn't want to have heaven and it be empty. He wants us there. And so he chastens us. He gives us a law. Okay, so where do I find it? We looked at this passage this morning. Peter told us where to look. One of his keys. 2 Peter 3 verses 1 and 2. This second epistle, beloved, I now write unto you, in both which I stir up your pure minds by way of remembrance. Okay, let's pause just a second. This morning I tried to make a big deal out of a passage in 1 Peter 5. Which was the end of the first letter of Peter. Okay, right now we're looking at 2 Peter 3, which is the end of the second letter of Peter. And he didn't know if he was going to write another one. If he did, we don't have it. So this is like his parting shot. This is it. So what thing of importance would he give as the parting shot? He said, I want to stir up your pure minds by way of remembrance, that you may be mindful of two things, of the words, mindful of the words which were spoken before by the holy prophets, and of the commandments of us, the apostles, of the Lord and Savior. The commandments of the apostles. Well, where are they? They're not listed like the Ten Commandments, but they're all in the New Testament. Now, just for the sake of comparison, let's look at something I've been using on a study of Jesus' commandments in the four Gospels. And you may think, well, you don't need to be going to the four Gospels to get commandments of Jesus. Well, just bear with me. Just bear with me. I believe that the types of commandments that Jesus left us could be divided easily into five groups. You could group them into three. You could make seven out of them. There's nothing magic about this, but it just looked logical to me to look at Jesus' commandments in five different ways. The first one is, some of Jesus' commandments were situation specific and they don't apply to us. For instance, when the 4,000 and so they were fed, one of the commands of Jesus at the beginning of that was to make the men sit down. Well, that's a direct command. Jesus said, make the men sit down. Well, we don't observe that. If it was, none of the men would ever stand up. So that was a situation-specific command. Now, this may seem trivial, but you've got to put everything in context. Put everything in context. Some were situation-specific, but let us see what can be done. For instance, the woman taken in adultery. Jesus healed her. He said, go your way. But when she left, he said three words that kills us. He said, sin no more. There was a man that Jesus healed, and he told him the same thing. Go your way and sin no more, lest something worse fall upon you. Sin, he put it on them. He didn't tell them, okay, I've forgiven you, and that's blanket forgiveness. You go on and live the way you want to live, and you consider yourself blanket forgiven. for the sins that you're going to do in the future. He didn't tell her that. He didn't tell him that. He said, go. You go and sin no more. Some things were simply stated as facts. It wasn't a thou shalt do this or a thou shalt do that. Now, I know some of y'all heard this comparison before, but just bear with me because it's the best example I've got to explain this. Why do you think Jesus would give us facts, commandments as simple facts? Well, Jesus knew human nature, and he knew human nature is to rebel. Eve proved that. God told Eve, don't do this one thing right here. Don't eat of this tree. And Eve said, where is it? Because human nature. And Jesus knew that. So let's just suppose after church is over, we're all about to leave, and I'm standing back there ready to shake everybody's hands, and I just all of a sudden stand across that door and hold my arms out and say, y'all can't go out this door. You cannot go out this door. I absolutely say, nobody goes out this door. Okay? Most of you would say, that guy's crazy. I'm going out that door. I don't care what he says, I'm going out that door. Y'all distract him on this side, and I'm going to get out that door on the other side. He's not going to tell me that I can't go out that door. But if I stood there at that door and I said, I just looked at that door, and I don't know where they came from, but there's a diamondback rattlesnake, there's a black mamba, and there's a king cobra out there, and they're all mad and trying to strike and bite each other. Now, you can go out there if you want to. How many of you are going to go out the door? None. What's the difference? You resisted me giving you a command. But when I give you a fact, a smart man will take the facts and think through the consequences and make the right decision. And so Jesus gave many times just simple facts. If people do this, they can get into heaven. If people don't do this, there's no way they're getting into heaven. It's just stated as a fact. And a smart man is going to take it and comprehend it. They're going to get themselves in the mental reality of it, and they're going to act upon it. Simply stated as fact. Some are universal, Old Testament and New Testament, doesn't matter. The fields are white unto harvest. Is that Old Testament or New Testament? That's both. Because all that is about getting lost people to the Lord. And the Lord wanted people to come to Him in the Old Testament just like He wants them to come to Him now. So some things Jesus said was universal, and some are just so simple that we read them and don't think that much about them. Things that we're supposed to be doing toward each other. Anyway, what we want to look at right now, I give you those five things because I want you to see that in the New Testament, Many things are just simply stated as a fact. And unless you can comprehend that and soak that in, you'll miss a lot of things. Things simply stated as facts. Let's look at some observations on doing the commandments now that we know where they are. We're going to look at some specifically in just a second. Observations on the commandments: it is by them that we show our love to God. John 14 and 15 said, if you love me, keep my commandments. 2 John 1, 5 and 6 says, not in though I wrote a new commandment unto you, but that which we had from the beginning, that we love one another. And this is love, and this is important. Okay? This is important. This is love, that we walk after his commandments. This is love, that we walk after his commandments. That's a commandment stated as a fact. That's all it is. He didn't tell us what we were supposed to do. He just told us what this was. If we love him, we're going to keep his commandments. And we believe that as he left this earth, he left the power of the Holy Spirit and the Holy Ghost to guide the apostles. And they continued to give the commandments. As Peter said, be mindful of the words spoken before by the prophets and of us, the apostles. So now let's move into love. Now there was a reason that we talked about the law, but now we're going to move into love. observations on love. There's something I want you to see. Two Greek words were translated love with slightly but significantly different meanings. And we need to get this before we get any farther in this lesson. One of those words translated love, and there's other ways this thing could be spelled, okay? And there's about three, maybe two or three different Greek words that are translated into this word, but they're in the same group, phileo. Phileo love was a warm, fuzzy, feely kind of a love, as of a friend. It's the love as of someone that's paying you back for good feelings. You're getting good feelings out of them. You're loving them because they have loved you. You get along real good with them. On the other hand, we have another kind of love, which is agape love. And agape love includes phileo love to some extent. It is a good kind of love, but more a sense of duty and specific obligation as to an acquaintance. An acquaintance. What's the difference between a friend and an acquaintance? Well, if you've got some good friends, you might use this expression about them. These people are just my kind of people. I just like them. We compliment each other. We're around each other. We feel good when we're around each other. We don't get to fusses and fights and scrapes. They're just my kind of people. But on the other hand, if you're like me, and I know you are, you work, you know a lot of different people. You have a lot of acquaintances. But to be honest, they're not my kind of people. And you probably know people like that are your acquaintances. But they don't have the temperament that you would call a friend. They don't treat you like you would think a friend would treat you. But yet you know them, and you may have to work closely with them. And so this agape love is the good way that you would treat someone who's an acquaintance, who is not like a friend that would give you a lot of touchy-feely love back and, oh, I'm going to treat you good. I'm going to treat you good because you make me feel so good. And you have made me feel so good in the past that when I'm in your presence, I feel good when I'm in your presence. No, agape love says, you know, you really hadn't treated me that good, but God says that I'm going to love you, and so I'm going to love you with agape love. I'm going to do the things that love would do, even though I may not feel it exactly. We're going to do the things that we've got to do. Now, I don't want that to sound too hard, but I'm building a case. I'm planting seeds. There's a difference between phileo and agape love. Now, let's look at an illustration of an exchange between Jesus and Peter, and we'll see them both used. You may remember this. When Jesus was resurrected, he had an encounter with Peter, and he asked him if he loved him. Now, I'm going to show you the words that were actually used for love. This is in John 21, verse 15. Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Love you me more than these?" And Jesus used the word agape. Love you me. Love me. Do you love me, Peter, with a sense of duty? Now, keep in mind that one of the last encounters that Jesus had with Peter until this one was when Peter denied him before Jesus was crucified. Peter said, "I won't do it," but he did it. Peter left him. And so now Jesus is about to leave, and he's going to leave the church in the apostles' hands. And he sort of wants to know, "Peter, just how do you feel about this? Are you going to do better by me than you did about a few days ago? So many days ago? Are you going to do better, or is it going to be the same thing?" And so Jesus asked him, "Peter, do you agape love me? Do you love me with the love of duty and to do the right thing?" Peter said unto him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." And he used the phileo term. "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you as a friend." And that wasn't what Jesus asked. So Jesus kept going. Next verse. He said to him again the second time, Simon, son of Jonas, love, agape, you me, Peter. I'm going to ask you again. Do you love me with the love of duty? Will you do what you need to do? You betrayed me once. You left your post. Will you love me with duty this time? He said unto him, Yes, Lord, you know that I love phileo you. He said unto him, Feed my sheep. So what did Peter do to him second time? Same thing. He said, Yes, Lord, you know I love you as a friend. But that wasn't what Jesus wanted. Jesus didn't want him to just feel good about it. He wanted Peter to do what he was supposed to do. Now, I can't explain this. The next verse, Jesus backed off. He said unto him the third time, Simon, son of Jonas, love, phileo, you me. Jesus changed it. This time, Jesus used the phileo term. Peter was grieved because he said unto him the third time, love, phileo, as a friend, love you me just as a friend. And he said unto him, Lord, you know all things. You know that I love phileo you. Jesus said unto him, feed my sheep. Now, what exactly was Jesus trying to do? I read a lot of different things about this one. And some of it, the logic didn't make sense. So I'm just going to tell you that I don't know to tell you exactly what Jesus was trying to do. Not exactly. I know he was trying to get Peter's attention. And he was trying to bore into him with just how he loved him and what kind of love he had for him. But why he changed it the third time and asked him, okay, Peter, do you really love me just as a friend? And Peter said, you know, the same way. He answered the same. But all of that is just to show you that it makes a difference which one of these words is used and to what they mean. Now, why? It is by love that we show to others and show God that we will follow His commandments. Now, the verse I'm fixing to show you is where we tie law and love together. And where we tie the idea that the law can tell us how to love, if we know the difference between agape love and phileo love, the things we're supposed to do. All right? Most of you are thinking ahead, and you know where we're going. 1 Corinthians 13, verses 4 through 7. Paul lays this out. Now remember, we tried to make the case that many times in the New Testament, commandments are simply stated as facts. But they're stated in such a way that a smart man will realize and think through the consequences and make the right decision. Paul said, and remember, Paul, even though he wasn't one of the main original apostles, he was given a gift. Peter said that Paul was given special wisdom according to the gift of wisdom that Paul had. Paul said, charity. And that word charity is the agape word. It's the same word that is sometimes translated love. Agape. Charity, agape love, suffers long and is kind. Charity, agape, envies not. Charity, agape, vaunts not itself, is not puffed up, does not behave itself unseemly, seeks not her own, is not easily provoked, thinks no evil, rejoices not in iniquity, but rejoices in the truth. Bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, and endures all things. Let's look at all of them together. Charity suffers long and is kind. There's only 15. And I wouldn't want to ask for a show of hands, but it would be interesting as to how many of you know all these 15 and have them committed to memory, and you do the things every day that you must do to obey these 15 things. Because if there's one thing that I want you to get out of this lesson tonight, is there are things that God has put in the Bible for us to read and study that we have got to do. And I don't want to stand, I hate to even stand here and say, we have got to do these things. But there's things so basic to showing God we love Him by doing His commandments that we can't neglect them. We can't pass them off and say they're not important. They are very important. Love suffers long and is kind. Love envies not, vaunts not itself, is not puffed up, does not act unseemly, seeks not its own, is not provoked, thinks no evil, rejoices not in iniquity, but rejoices in the truth, bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, and endures all things. There's 15 of them. We don't have time to do them all 15 tonight because I knew we'd try to lay down the foundation of the law, but we're going to go over two. We're going to go over two. Lord willing, we're going to save the other 13 and hammer them out tomorrow night. But all I want to do tonight is to establish the law. We obey the law. The law will save us. If we break the law, that's a transgression. Sin is a transgression of the law. I don't know how plainer that it can be said. This is not just good ideas. This is not just ways to stay married. This is the law. This is agape love, not phileo love. This is what we do because we're supposed to do it, not because we're going to be rewarded so much by the other person. But we're going to be rewarded by Jesus. In fact, that is how we get through some of these things, because some of these are hard. Some of these are hard. You know, it's easy to love somebody that loves you back. But how do you show these things of love to somebody that doesn't reciprocate? So let's just look at the first two, and you'll see the pattern that we're going to look at. Charity, agape, love, suffers long. What does that mean? To suffer long. Sometimes it's written as be patient. That's good. I sort of like suffers long, though, because sometimes it is a suffering. It means slow to anger or passion. Long-suffering, patient endurance, forbearance. And forbearance is withholding to say something you could say. Okay? So if you're the kind of person that has got an opinion about everything and you think you've got the right to say it, whether it's going to hurt somebody's feelings or not, you better check this one out. Part of the definition is forbear. That means to not say what you could say. To bear long when oppressed, when provoked, or when one tries to injure us. It's the opposite of haste. It's the opposite of a passionate expression of thought, of being irritable, or being very spontaneous and just popping off. Suffering long is more than just being patient. It's being smooth. It's being smooth. Being patient and being smooth. Don't you like to work with people like that? This kind of love gives another time to change. See, sometimes we're into this all for ourselves. What am I going to get out of this? But as we go through these 15 things, I think you're going to see that this is all about how to make the other person feel. All about for the good of the other person. Charity suffers long. To give the other person in the relationship time to change. So we'll ask a question, how? Okay? How? And I've got an answer, but I'm not saying it's the best answer. So you can answer this one yourself. But on each one of these, I'm going to ask you the question, how do I suffer long? You see, and we're not talking about the fuzzy-feely kind where you got to do it toward a good friend because you're going to get something back. This is what are you going to do whether they give you anything back or not. This is what you're going to do because Jesus is watching you, not because they're watching you. How? Well, this is my answer. Realize that God's plan is not on the same timetable as ours. With the Lord, one day is as 1,000 years. You know, the Lord may be looking down upon us, and this is hard. But the Lord may have a plan for us where we've got to suffer long for 20 years before change is going to be made, or longer. I heard a fellow was telling me that he and his wife got married, and as soon as they got married, they had a very bad disagreement about which way their family was going to go. And this was such a bad disagreement, it got in bed with them. And that's hard for a newlywed, especially a newlywed man. And he decided he was going to try to get out of it. And so he said he looked for every way he could to divorce his wife, because he wanted out. He looked every way he could, and he said his final conclusion, he could find absolutely no way he could divorce her. There was no scriptural way, and he was scared of the scriptures. And so he said, I just made up my mind that this was the way it was going to be. And he said, as soon as I made up my mind, this is his words, not mine. He said, as soon as I made up my mind that this is the way it was going to be, I just let it go. I just let it go. And when the last time I talked to him and he told me this, he said, my wife and I have been together for 55 years. Now, you think that's phileo love, or you think that's agape love? You think everything he did was for her, or did he have Jesus in his rearview mirror, knowing whatever he was doing was for Jesus? Suffering long. Love suffers long. The waiting is not until you get what you want, but the waiting is for the other person to change. Love suffers long. Beware. Beware. Throw out a caution here. Often the longer the wait, the harder grows the heart. So don't let yourself get hard-hearted. That's not Jesus' way. Don't just bow up and just get so tough that you're scarred to everything else. Love is kind. Oh, don't we love this one? Good-natured, gentle, tender, mild, affectionate, wishes well. I don't know how to describe that first phrase, good-natured, but I don't imagine there's a one of you that don't know what that means and that doesn't sound good to you. It's kind. Love is kind. It's good-natured. It is courteous under all provocation. It is not harsh, sour, morose, or sad countenance. It's not ill-natured. No feelings of severity, unkindness of expression, anger, or a desire of revenge is what the word kind means. Can we obey? Have we obeyed? I can't say that I have, but I know what I'm supposed to do. Kind. How? Try a kind response. Once you feel the peace that passes understanding, you will know. Just try it. Just try it. You know, I'd read in the Bible a lot of times about a gentle answer turns away wrath. And I'd heard that, and I knew it, and I had it in my conscience, but I'd really never had to practice it until this guy came in from work, and he was mad, and he was mad at me, and he shut the door and came in my office, and the folks outside heard him. And, I mean, if I'd come back at him just like he was coming at me, there'd probably been a scrap right there, because that's how mad he was. And I remembered that verse, a kind answer. And I just tried to please him the best way I could, in as calm and as little and as low a voice as I could. And he kept coming back one time, two times, three. About the fourth time, I don't know whether he got tired or he just got sick of fooling with me, and I wasn't going to let him agitate me. But he just calmed down and left. And it all smoothed over. And we worked together for a lot. We worked together several years after that and had a good relationship. It worked once. I didn't know it'd work. I'd never had to try it. I'd been told. I didn't know it'd work. But it worked. Isn't that amazing? Something God told us, it worked. This will work too. Love suffers long, and love is kind. Try a kind response, and you feel the peace that passeth understanding. It's like the man said when he released the tension from his marriage. You just let it go, and it says just like it just flows away. It just flows out of you. Yeah, the other person's still mad, but that's their problem. They still got issues, but that's their issues. You hadn't got them. You can't fix everybody. You may want to, but you can't fix everybody. You husbands, you can't fix your wife. And you wives, you can't fix your husband. You do the best you can. It's the way it is with people. And people got to fix themselves with the truth and with good treatment. So we do the best we can. But we've got to make sure we're doing the best we can. We can't just say I'm doing good. We've got to do good. The law of love. First question. What is the real purpose of all the law? Well, we kind of tried to answer that pretty good. What is the real purpose? To qualify us for the best reward of all. For our profit, that we might be partakers of His holiness, that we might have heaven. That's why the law was given and why we observe it. What are the two kinds of love? Phileo love, warm, fuzzy, feely kind of a love, and agape, the love of duty. And by the way, if you want to do a word count, and there's all kind of computer programs that'll do this for you, there's way more agape loves than there is phileo love. In almost every case, okay, almost every case, when it's spoken of the love God has for man, it's not phileo love. It's agape love. God doesn't love us because we're so good, touchy-feely, and give Him stuff back. God loves us with agape love. He sent His Son while we were yet sinners. While we were the scum of the earth, He loved us so much, He sent His Son. We weren't doing anything to give God back anything. He loved us with agape love. And that's the way He wants us to love others and give them time to make corrections. Can the law tell me who or how to love? Yes. And it does it better than we could. It will tell you. It will tell you who you're supposed to love and how you're supposed to love them. We've gone over 2 of the 15. Lord willing, we'll go over the other 13. But keep in mind, this is not just an exercise in good ideas. It's not just an exercise in good points. We're following through to explain the law, the commandments. You don't like to think about being commanded to love. Well, depends on what kind of love it is. The law is not commanding us to love phileo love, everybody. It's telling us how to love agape love, the duty we have to love other people. So please just consider all of these things together. Consider all the scriptures, what God is trying to tell us. And let's don't get caught on the judgment day. And the Lord says, you didn't follow my book. I gave you all these guidelines, all these problems you brought on yourself. And I had in the book stuff that you wouldn't have got in those problems to start with. And then I had the book for the solutions to all those problems. You didn't read that either. And you didn't follow my commandments. Now what am I supposed to do with you? You judged yourself. We don't want to do that. As we mentioned this morning, we cannot miss heaven and go to hell. We cannot let ourselves go to hell. And we don't need to get tripped up on things that we don't recognize as a commandment. So if anyone is here tonight and subject to the gospel call, if we can help in any way to be partakers of this glorious holiness, will you let us help while we stand and sing?